It is June the 1st, 2024. I'm Chris, and this is The Future of Photography.
The Future of Photography.
Good, whatever, morning, afternoon. Hi, Jeremiah. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay from the other dimension known as California.
Known as Los Angeles. All right. Yeah. Well, it's just the two of us today. And we want to talk 3D again. Because why not? Because why? And I must say, it is kind of the future of photography. It might not be coming quite as fast as we all hope it would with all the goggles and the virtual and augmented things. But Apple has kind of kicked this off in the developer space. The WWDC is pretty close, and while it has become a bit quiet around the Apple Vision Pro, I'm pretty sure we're going to see a lot of that, and maybe even an announcement for like a cheaper model that is a bit more accessible to mere mortals.
Cheaper, lighter, faster, better.
That's the hope, at least.
But you know, with the software that's running it and the kind of notion of it, I think the promise is good. I mean, my experience with 3D does go back.
You've been doing holography and all the weird analog stuff
for a long, long time. I mean, almost as long as I've been a photographer. You know, my first memory, of course, like everyone, was on the
the ViewMaster.
ViewMasters.
Yeah, I had those.
And I think I was at some jumble sale somewhere and bought a beautiful Bakelite box, purpose-built from ViewMaster, limited edition, that must have about 200 or 300 of them, and an old Bakelite ViewMaster.
200 or 300 viewer. Discs?
Yes, and I
have
them. I still have them, and they are magical and weird and crappy. And
I think I felt good with having 5, maybe, yeah. And half of them, or at least more than half of them, with some Disney stuff on them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some of them are cartoons, some of them are like faded ectochromes of Paris, and wow. You know, it's all of that. And you know, probably picked it up for like $6 at the sale and just kept it. The interesting thing is, you know, that's when I did buy a 3D camera. I think it was the first one I bought was a Kodak twin lens, used 35mm film. It was built extremely well. I would use Kodachrome. And at that time, Kodachrome had the option. When you sent your Kodachrome 3D, it would come back as mounted slides in a vertical format that you would use, that's the camera, in a viewer. And it was, you know, for those of us who remember Kodachrome, especially if you shot, say, Kodachrome 25, absolutely crisp, sharp, saturated, beautiful. And if you composed it right and had your foreground, middle ground, and background, it would be astonishing. Really, really great. And I have those and the viewer still packed away, and they are as good today as they were shot. And I shot a lot of kind of artsy things then. Mm. You know, from then I got very interested in, you know, how would you work that with projection, and managed to acquire, again, probably it wasn't eBay, of course, but some used camera. So I could take those slides, and this was a projector of 3D images, and people would wear polarized lenses at that time to view it on a screen. And part of the gallery that I had been partner with, you know, we would have kind of purpose-built nights of projected art and whatnot, and would project these. And this is going back to the probably the early 70s. I mean, way back.
Here's one. Here's a camera that I have in my somewhere in a showcase. A stereo realist.
Ah, stereo realist. Yes. So know it well. Beautiful camera. And the lenses were really
built good. Like a tank.
Yes, built like a tank. All metal, very heavy, fabulous.
Yeah.
From that point, I got interested in holography, which was very new. You needed to do early holography. You needed a vibration-free table. Mm-hmm. You needed a powerful red laser. You needed a beam splitter. And you needed to coat your own emulsion. You had to make your own emulsion that coated a glass plate. And then you needed to put that glass plate in front of the object you were going to photograph. And then light that object with a red laser and have the beam splitter split the light so that the light would be moved between the object and the plate. And we also had an ND, which we purpose-built. It was a circular ND so that you would adjust the exposure or the amount of bounce from the object onto the plate so that you can control that.
And that would then create an interference pattern that you could relight with a point light source and...
Exactly.
Kind of so bring when you back took to the, life, yeah.
When and this is all trial and error.
Oh yes.
Developed the plate, then you could put it in the holder, shine a beam onto it, and that object would be created in the background. You'd look through the plate to the object, and it was as if it was there. Really, really beautiful.
I talked to someone in the south of Germany, in Stuttgart, and they had a lab in the middle of the city doing their holograms, and the traffic was bad and made it almost impossible for them to do it for the vibrations. So they had to schedule it around the train schedule.
Yes, of course.
And they also invested in a 5-ton concrete slab under the whole setup. So
sure.
To decouple it from the vibrations of the buses driving by. So
well, we had a stainless steel table about 4 inches thick.
That's heavy.
Very heavy. Put into our studio. And a big, maybe 5-foot long red laser, which you really couldn't shine on your eyeball. It would blind you.
Yeah.
And all of this courtesy of the Canada Council. We got an arts grant to do that.
Oh.
You know, we were, you know, we had some credibility. I have one of the artists working in 3D. So we could, you know, we could say we are serious artists, young as we were, working in 3D. And we did get just a ton of money from them to build this and do this. And some of the work was acquired. The earliest art holograms were acquired by the Museum of Holography, where we had a big show in New York, and on and on and on. But that led to some of my more funkier explorations, which was in anaglyphs. And I happen to be a big fan of anaglyphs because they are easy to, very, very easy to make. Anaglyphs,
the
basically.
The red, blue glasses.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they look phenomenal as a print. They appear to be sort of black and whitey.
Yeah.
But they're a lot of fun. You can do them at home, and we're gonna kind of step through some of the things you can do on our TFOP photo, shared photo album.
Yeah, I'm going to link those in the show notes. And just while you talk, I'm going to try to bring them up here.
Yeah, so those are there. Those are there to be enjoyed. But you need those glasses either with like little cardboard holders or get yourself a pair of proper red cyan glasses and have fun with it. I, of course, I, of course, made a few CG images of...
Is the one we're looking at right now here in the video, is that a CG? It.
That is completely CG and 3D.
But it's not AI. It is...
It's AI.
Oh, it is even. And does does it work? Let me check with my glasses.
No, it works stunningly beautiful.
It is. Okay. So the AI is capable of doing...
Yes,
that.
Except I didn't use AI to make the 3D effect. I created the image and refined it. Then I converted it to AI. I used a series of images and adjusted the left-right focal to
so
on the eyes.
you brought in some human magic to make this work.
Well, and here's another one. Yes, sort of a Mandela spaceship.
Yeah.
Now, awesome. I've printed these about 1722, quite, you know, nice size prints. Very, very, you know, beautifully rendered. I think I used some bamboo, Hanamiel bamboo gloss. And the 3D effect is spectacular. I mean, it looks like these images are coming right out of the paper. I've seen at exhibits anaglyph paper images that I think Thomas Struth did one, I think. And they had to be like maybe 60 inches tall, and they looked absolutely magnificent. So, you know, there's a lot of fun to be had. It's still a great endeavor. You can print these at home, and you can shoot these with your iPhone or whatever. But we'll step through a few different ways for people to participate.
Here's a video that you shared with us that's in the show notes, someone explaining how to make that, how to do that at home.
And it's really worth looking at because it's very, very simple. And there's a lot of ways to do it that are very, they don't require a lot of technology. And then there are some that are extremely sophisticated and all worth exploring. And they look great on a screen. They look great printed. And, you know, I don't think you can get your slides processed to look through a 3D printer, but, you know, maybe in the future. Certainly, I've been exploring the ability to take a 3D photograph and move it effectively into the VR glasses, but I've not had total success yet, but will. I think the real fun in that is building spectacular 3D environments, applying that into the VR glasses just for immersive experiences in kind of being inside art. So this How to Create a 3D Anaglyph Photo Effect is very, very good. And, you know, I think they're focused on GIMP, which is a open source Photoshop.
But the method will work in
anything.
In anything,
basically,
pretty much, that can do layers.
I mean, the principle is you take a photograph that is basically a left eye photo and then a right eye photo. And
if you have a not moving subject, you can literally take two photos and just move the camera in between.
Yes, you can just shift your weight that way and do it. And then with some of the software we'll go over quickly, you can adjust them so that there's less eye strain. Here's one, you know. I've used most of these and, you know, it's really user just choose the one that fits with your workflow. None of these are complicated.
So we're going to share a few of these apps, links to apps. This is 3D Photo, Stereo Image Maker, and then you had a i3D Steroid.
Yeah, and they work very, very nicely as well.
All right, so these are specifically made for
iPhone.
Taking pictures on your iPhone and then making them into anaglyph stereograms.
Yes, and there's many different ways of shooting or composing. You can shoot something called parallel, which, if you remember the 18th century little viewing boxes, they held a carte de visite or something quite small, two images. They fit in a little slot. You looked at it at a certain distance, and that created a 3D effect. So people have been using 3D image making since the beginning of photography pretty well. This is Slashdot's kind of list of all manner of 3D
plenty
images.
Plenty of them.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're halfway interested in this, you can find a piece of software that is worth exploring and having fun, you know, with it.
And I would argue this is the right time to dip your toes in the 3D water, because we are at the verge of a few big things happening in the way we consume media, and 3D will be part of that.
Yeah, I think gaming is going to be a major, certainly a major proponent of the 3D experience, immersive 3D.
Gaming has been one of the big drivers of tech innovation, and porn has been the other one. So
yeah. And then following, you have training, surgical training, mechanic training, where you can actually look into a jet engine and be guided exactly to what areas to focus on that are a recreation of the reality microscopically. Surgeons are using them to kind of operate in, you know, very, very specific, and robots are using it as well.
Surgeons, depending on the kind of surgery you get, that might be a robot that a surgeon is remote controlling using a 3D headset. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have that kind of immersiveness. So it is something that is not just of the past. I think in terms of how to kind of enjoy it, there's a lot of different ways you can experience it. Again, parallel, what they call parallel, which is two images side by side in a viewer at the right distance will give you that effect. Now, some people can kind of look at that image with a slight eye cross and bring those images together and see a parallel photograph in 3D, but I find that too eye straining and weird.
I could always do this quite well, to just relax your eyes and look through the screen, and but it's not for everyone.
No. And then, the other one is what we've been talking about, anaglyph, which is just separating left and right into two separate colors. Anaglyph Workshop is my personal favorite. I really like it. It's a very old school.
It's not mobile. It's on a Mac and on a Windows.
That's right. It's something that you would use after you've taken a left and right photo, or you have a left and right photo which you would like to separate and adjust. Because in stereo, if you've been to the movies and seen a 3D movie early on, the parallax, which is the distance between left and right, can create eye strain, especially if you're focusing close and far and medium and whatnot, because the eye has to adjust not only focus, but in terms of turning in and out, and it creates a eye strain. Well, that now, in terms of the new technology of cinema 3D, which waxes and wanes in terms of popularity, they've adjusted that so that even in the photography cinematically, you can adjust where the parallax, we call the nodal point is for the kind of perfect eye relaxation and effect. And I've had some experience in that as well. But going back to how to experience it, there's lenticular, which is creating a, I think the viewers will be familiar with those kind of funny postcards that flip back and forth. They look a little animated, or sometimes in 3D.
They might just when you rotate them slightly, they might show you different kinds of pictures, or they might show each eye a different picture.
That's it. And anaglyphs are really a beautiful way to do it. There's a few. There are companies that do it cheaply. There are companies that do it for fine art. And in 2019, I had an exhibit of large lenticulars.
You can even buy lenticular, like a foil with these lenses built in, and make your own.
You can. It's a very tricky bit of business.
I would think so, yeah.
The problem is that there used to be a lot of lens manufacturers with these very, very thin lenses, and you can create your print in Photoshop, which basically slices and dices the left and the right and puts them together, and these thin lenses fit over it. And, you know, without going into super weeds, it creates that illusion. But mounting it and adjusting it and getting lenses that are fine quality, which is increasingly a problem for the manufacturers, because now I think only China makes them, and the consistency of quality is not exactly perfect, so that the high quality manufacturers of lenticulars have to go through this process of like just looking at each sheet of lenses, eliminating some, because you don't want to be going through all that trouble and having flawed lenses, which take away the effect. So there's that. And so you have lenticulars, you have parallel, and obviously the experience is a little bit different on each. In cinema, obviously you're using two lenses on cameras, or two cameras that are mounted on adjustable racks. And I had the opportunity of doing a kind of a test at Paramount with some of the more sophisticated cinema cameras that were built for 3D, but you need an army of people to help set it up and be able to view it live. An effective movie is Martin Scorsese's Hugo. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic 3D movie. Dial M for Murder, Hitchcock's 3D movie.
Was that shot in 3D or? Yeah. Okay, because
in 3D.
We see a ton of conversions these days that were of movies that were shot in 2D, and then they are.
Yeah, that's different.
They are with computers, with AI, with other tools, they are converted into 3D, yes. which often does look quite okay or quite
good. Well, speaking of which, that is the process on which I built my little, AI generated image, and then I converted it to 3D, something that Leapix does very, very effectively, and that'll be in the show notes. Worth exploring. Leapix, which is now converted to another. What do we call Leapix nowadays?
Immersity.
And they used to just do slight adjustments to still photos so that they have a little appearance. That's what their initial version is. But now you can take a 2D photograph, and it will generate a depth map, and you can output that depth map, and you can output a 3D version, and you can adjust there's a lot of adjustments to make that work. And that is in fact what I used for my print. So that works very, very well.
Depth detection from a 2D picture. That has come a long way. That used to be kind of the holy grail, but now with the according tech, it seems simple enough.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with Immersity or Leap. I think they've done an amazing job. And again, it's really fun to play with your own images, gives them a whole other feel. Even the most boring snapshot all of a sudden takes on another dimension. We have a couple of little kind of interesting gear. How to do it with your iPhone. Stereoscopic 3D camera, step-by-step guide. There you go. There's a bargain basement version of a parallel image, which is instead of two carte de visite images and a viewer. This is basically the same principle with your iPhone and a little plastic viewer, and there you go.
Yeah, and they're cheap. You can get those for a few bucks.
Yeah, and on the other side, if that isn't, you know, if you just have money burning a hole in your pocket and want a little bit better quality, you can go for the Matterport Pro.
It's a bargain. It's only $3,000. Come on. That's
it. And you probably need some, you know, accessories for it as well. And, you know, obviously these are guys who build scanners and, you know, professional grade scanners, etc., for industrial work and very
industrial high precision work. Real estate stuff and so on.
High precision work. And so, you know, don't feel that you're constrained by spending a little money on something.
All right,
that would work.
Let me throw one in here, which I just came across recently. There's this guy who talked about making art, 3D art with an iPhone, and he delves into what you can do with the Face ID side of the iPhone, e.g. the selfie camera, which, if you know the tech, it pretty much throws out a million dots in infrared and then finds out how far they are away and reconstructs a 3D image out of that. And there's a little app, I have no idea how to pronounce it, H-E-G-E-S, Hegis, something like that, which is free and which supports the LiDAR camera. And it's a bit fiddly. Well, again, it's free, so feel free to play with it. But it allows you to take 3D scans of objects and turns them into actual 3D objects. And not just that, you can then export them as 3D objects, as in OBG format or STL format and a couple more. So that way you have real, as in real 3D with in color. So I found this a very fun little toy to play with. If you have an iPhone, and it's, I think, starting with the iPhone 10, has the Face ID function, then you can use this tool and just play with
also
it.
Also, something fun to do is get yourself some red cyan glasses. They're cheap enough. You know, just do a Google search of Anaglyph images, and you'd be really, really struck by how many are out there, how many people are posting.
You get these glasses even in like a cardboard form. They look like these solar eclipse glasses, but with the red and blue. And those are like pennies. They're really, really cheap.
Yeah, they're, you know, at the exhibit I saw of 3D anaglyphs, etc., they just had a box of them for people to take, you know,
yes,
and experience and throw them out. And people are working in all kinds of formats. In fact, this week I did see an amazing show at the Getty. We're very lucky here in California to have the Getty, which is an amazing miracle of photo research, etc. Well, they had an exhibit called 19th Century Photography Now. So they had all these old techniques, including 3D, running beautiful, beautiful classic imagery from the earliest birth of photography up to now, but using those techniques. And then they had artists working in those old techniques parallel. And so you see that there is a really interesting way of combining what it is you want to achieve using old and new technology. And that's really, really fun. I think some of the best 3D images that I've just played with are from the VR goggles, where you can actually capture something and then look at it again in 3D, and it does look absolutely like you're looking through the goggle, and it looks absolutely flawlessly real. So that's coming.
Well. So
3D, 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 3D. Soon 4D.
3D, yeah, 4D. Okay, but 3D, let's start with three dimensions. And again, we do argue that that is an important part of the future of photography.
Yeah, I would say so. And, you know, as much for what you were saying, you know, scientifically, analytically, also interesting to do an experiment if you're shooting 3D landscapes, because it's infinity. It's very, very hard to take a 3D image of a kind of a wide, flat, or, you know, distant mountain landscape. What you need to do is take a picture and then move, you know, a half a mile in parallel, take another picture, and then combine it, and you'll get some very, very interesting effects.
Very cool. All right, so we have put all these links in the show notes, and everyone, it's playtime. And so while here, you guys, do you have something else?
No. Picture
all right,
me.
While you guys out there play with the tools, we have a couple of picks for you. And the first one is directly related, and it's a viewer or a camera or both.
Yeah, this is a goofy little object. What can I say? It's self-explanatory.
It looks a bit like a ViewMaster.
Yeah.
But it takes 3D photos.
Yeah.
And it's a viewer at the same time.
That's a really fun.
That looks fun.
It's fun. Yeah. This good stocking stuffer.
Awesome.
How much is that? I didn't catch the price.
I can't get the price here because it doesn't ship to Germany. Okay. So probably not super cheap. But looking fun. Awesome.
Yeah.
And it comes with a 3D selfie stick.
It does.
And of course you have one.
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't. Okay. I brought one that is sort of 3D related. Do you know this picture?
Yeah.
It's the Windows 10 desktop background photo.
It's a real picture. It's a real photo.
And it shows the Windows logo and the blue light shining through it and so on. I just found out that this is an actual photo. It's not 3D generated. It is a photography. They went into a studio. They played with, like, that's a real window you're seeing there, or four panes of glass. Then they used smoke to get the volumetric light, and then they added light from the back shining through that, and you see that the edges, I think, are that there's some laser projection built in that, and they just spent an entire weekend in a studio playing with smoke and light and a camera.
Shows you what you can do with old technology.
Isn't that fun? I mean, you are probably gonna, you've seen all that because you have been making movies and a lot of that stuff. I bet a lot of the things that we see in movies that we think are come out of a computer are actually practical.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We, you know, I think anyone working really prefers to do it in camera, you know, for a lot of reasons. I mean, part of it is that, you know, it goes to the editor and you start to cut it right away instead of imagining
what you see
what
is what you
get.
It's
going to be in 2 or 3 or 4 or 6 months.
Imagining and having to explain what you imagine to other people using words as opposed to just being able to show them. Am I right?
Well, it's even more more of a problem when you're previewing a movie with a lot of special effects in front of an audience just to get a sense of it, and you have actors, characters moving in front of green screens, you know, with the explanation that, oh yeah, it's going to be a monster here, you know.
And someone's holding up a broom stick with a tennis ball at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not the same.
It's definitely not the same. All right. Well, let me cue the outro music. 3D.
3D. Try it. 3D.
It's two letters or one one letter. And that's all we need. I find it really profound to, we see the world in 3D and we don't even notice because that's how we see it every day. But then when you see it on an artificial medium, it jumps out at you. So there we go. You can, of course, find more about us on the webs at thefuturephotography.com. Join our Discord. Link is in the show notes and on the screen. We'll be back pretty soon. Until then, everyone, take care and bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Future of Photography. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your other podcasts. Find the show notes and more information at thefutureofphotography.com.